in re interest of Robert W. And counsel, you may approach. Again, our final case of the day is in re interest of Robert W. Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is James Sieben. I'm a deputy public defender here in Lancaster County, and I represent Robert, the appellant in this juvenile matter. We are asking this court to overrule the dispositional order of the Separate Juvenile Court of Lancaster County, which wrongfully removed the juvenile from his family home and placed him in the group home known as Omaha Home for Boys, or shortened OHB. Our assignment of error revolves around the interpretation of Nebraska Revised Statute Section 43251.01, specifically subsection 7, which I will refer to as the removal statute. It also revolves around interpretation of recent case law from the Nebraska Supreme Court on how the removal statute should be interpreted.
Well, I'm going to fast forward you here a little bit, and I don't want to take you off your outline, but obviously the elephant in the room is the state's motion that the case is moot. So let's just go to that.
Okay. Your Honor, simply returning the youth to his home does not render the case moot. The case is not moot because the findings made in the out-of-home placement order and the reasonable efforts determination go far beyond the immediate impact of an out-of-home placement.
But isn't this always going to be a fact-specific focus? For example, if 6 months from now or a year from now and the child's still a juvenile and they try to do the same thing, isn't that issue going to be focused on what are the facts at that time, not what happened 6 months or 12 months ago?
Well, yeah, I think the focus does become fact-specific, but in discussing mootness, I think the most important thing to understand about juvenile court is that, especially in Robert's case, he's 15 currently, he was placed on a probation order until his minority, so he's on probation for at least another 3 years or so unless he's released early, and in that time, his case could progress in a way where whether or not this placement order was legally correct can become a reoccurring issue. Specifically, and most obviously, if the state were to pursue a commitment to the Youth Rehabilitation and Treatment Center in Kearney under 43286.
But at that time, wouldn't the state have to meet its burden of proof again to show that all other options had been exhausted?
Yes, but one of the ways that they would seek to show that is to say he has already resided in the group home level of care, therefore we can proceed with a motion to commit him to Kearney because that level of care has been exhausted. And so this court, the case remains of interest in the outcome of the litigation because if this court were to reverse the juvenile court's order, hold that the juvenile court's order removing him from the home was premature, contrary to the statute, then that could not be bootstrapped in the future if the state were to consider a motion for commitment to the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center.
But again, where I'm struggling here is the fact that something happened, say, when he was 15, and now he's 16 and a half or 17, and something else has happened. What happened when he was 15 isn't really going to necessarily be relevant, is it? Isn't the state going to have to show at that time when he's, let's say, 17, that they have done everything at that point, not what happened when he was 15, but at the time he was 17. This is what we did, and that we have exhausted all community available resources.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying. What I would say is that in juvenile court, typically the entire case is taken as a whole. There is a Supreme Court case that talks about this called In Re Interest of Nadal, where the court and the state has to show that all these efforts have been exhausted, and they can use prior placements to make that finding, to support that finding. So this placement remains relevant for that purpose. And further, there is also the issue of the fact that this is capable of repetition, yet evading review. In re interest of Donna H., the court clearly held that an out-of-home group home placement, the Supreme Court clearly held that an out-of-home group home placement is permanent in nature and subject to review. And essentially, what this court would be holding if they found that it was moot was that because Robert did so well in a placement that he disagreed with, he now lost his right to appeal. And alternatively, if we proceeded and the court found it moot, because the case was not alive at this time, if and when it becomes alive at a later date because the state seeks to use it as an effort to prove a higher level of care, such as a motion for commitment to YRTC, since the issue would be reborn and it would no longer be moot, then there would be the consequence of filing an interlocutory appeal or something to that effect at a later date, which doesn't seem to be a good policy for the court to enact today. The fact is that because this case is still alive and because it is capable of repetition yet evading review, the court should find that the issue is not moot and should allow it to proceed on the merits.
If I can ask a question on the merits, is there a definition of what community resources is?
The community resources, generally speaking, in juvenile court, is services that can be implemented when the juvenile is residing in the home. So a group home, even though it's in the community of Omaha, he's not in a detention facility. It's a removal, so it's not a community resource.
Is the home itself part of the community resources?
Yes, I think that participation of parents in the plan and a parent's ability to parent their child is something that can be considered.
Was that part of the problem here, was that that home component was an issue with who would be present in the home and in terms of the mom, not so much with the mom, I don't think, but with respect to the boyfriend and other people that would provide supervision. So was that part of the linchpin for the juvenile court, that we just can't get this home right because we've got some problems with the people that are there?
That was something that the court was concerned with. I think they made that clear. And that's why the court ordered, after there was an initial evaluation done with Robert that recommended in-home services, that probation provide additional information to the evaluator about the juvenile's home situation, also about the juvenile's school situation. And the evaluator, Dr. Zlomke, analyzed that additional information and came up with the same conclusion. There was a mother that was willing to work extremely hard to keep her child in the home. She was willing to cooperate with the rules of probation. So if they said, Robert cannot be supervised by this individual, she was willing to abide by that and find an alternative plan, to the point where she was willing to supervise him when he was not in therapy and when he was not at school the remainder of the time he was in the community.
Didn't the school also say they were not equipped to handle him under the circumstances?
The school did not say that. Yankee Hill, which is the behavioral school here in Lincoln, did admit him into their program. His mother did get him enrolled. And one of the juvenile probation officers, Ms. Bussey, did testify that Yankee Hill met the specific educational requirement recommended in Dr. Zlomke's evaluation. So I believe that schooling, despite the appellee's contention, there was an appropriate plan for schooling put in place. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Before you do that, was it the Nadal case you were referring to earlier?
Yes, that's one of the cases that was relied upon in re interest of Donna H., Kiana R., and Nicholas K., which are the cases cited in our briefs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Julie Maruse and I'm a deputy Lancaster County attorney here, and I represent the appellee, which is the state of Nebraska. They would respectfully ask this court to affirm the separate juvenile court's order, which placed the appellant in out-of-home placement. To address the mootness issue, I would argue that even if overturned, it's not that the time at OHB is like it never existed. The ability to discuss the appellant's failures or success at OHB would still remain, regardless of whether or not this court overturned the juvenile court's order. The court is exactly correct in that if we were to file for YRTC in the future, we would still have to meet that burden that all of the community-based resources and levels have been exhausted. Anything that had a reasonable probability of success would have been utilized. So addressing the mootness issue, I don't think that Appley's argument is holds any weight at this time. This case is unique in that the appellant was adjudicated on a very serious law violation. He was adjudicated on account of possession of a weapon to commit a felony. I think it's imperative to note the facts of this case. He literally held a gun, which was later found to be loaded when law enforcement located the weapon in the family home, to the victim's head. And he asked other peers in the group if he should shoot the victim. And it wasn't until after the victim begged him not to shoot and the other peers indicated he shouldn't shoot her that he walked away. Eventually, after multiple hearings and a lot of evidence put on in front of the juvenile court, an out-of-home placement was found. Now, appellant incorrectly argues that the adjudicated juveniles are required or to be given the opportunity within the community before the court places them out of home. Now, in Re Kiana R., the Supreme Court did hold that the state must provide evidence that establishing no other community-based resources has a reasonable probability for success, or that all options for community-based services have been thoroughly considered and none are feasible. And that's exactly what the juvenile court did in this case. There was extensive hearings that we thoroughly considered all options for community-based services, and the court did utilize the two-part test in 43.251.01, which has the two-part test when looking at placing kids out of home. Now, the first prong, there's ample evidence that the court considered all reasonable options to come up with the safety plan that was recommended by Dr. Zlomke. Now, Dr. Zlomke recommended a nearly continuous supervised safety plan with an initial step of passing Robert from one adult to the next, so essentially a seamless pass-off between adults to ensure that he had no weapons on his person. Now, probation did work with the appellant's mother, Ms. Bowers, in order to come up with a possible plan. I think it's imperative to note that the in-home services that Dr. Zlomke suggested if he were to stay in the home, he was denied at Boys Town, he was denied at Youth Care and Beyond, which are both 24/7 programs, overnight residential places that they are designed to have supervision of youth that have behavioral issues and have been adjudicated. Paradigm, which is also a service that offers the intensive family therapy, which was one of the recommendations that Dr. Zlomke maybe suggested if he were to stay in the home, also denied appellant due to the severity of the offense, the safety threat, and the high risk to maintain safety with just IFB in the home. Now, some services were available, quote, almost immediately. However, there was no evidence as to whether or not how long it would take for these services to be implemented. So this would not meet the safety plan that Dr. Zlomke recommended. Ultimately, it doesn't matter if these services were available right away because the other portions of the safety plan outlined by probation and Ms. Bowers did not meet the seamless plan that Dr. Zlomke laid out. Appellant does note that the home was looked into by probation. It was not conducive to the appellant's rehabilitation and treatment. It also proved to be detrimental to that treatment. This is similar to Henry Nicholas, in which the court found that community resources were exhausted when the juvenile's home life was not conducive and harmful to rehabilitation. There were multiple issues pointed out in the home. The live-in boyfriend had an assaultive history. He had an extensive criminal history. The home was a victim of multiple burglaries, which law enforcement was suspicious that the burglaries were due to the amount of controlled substances in the home. There was smell of marijuana by law enforcement when they went in to retrieve the loaded weapon in the appellant's home. And they indicated that this was indicative of long-term use, not just a one-time use of marijuana. Also, all the previous delinquent behavior that was mentioned in the record of appellant occurred when the juvenile was in the home. He was on diversion for MIP, and then he obtained new law violations, theft and assault. And these prior community-based resources were offered through diversion, and he was given the opportunity to not be referred to the county attorney's office if he were able to successfully complete that diversion. However, when he was adjudicated offense with the loaded weapon, he was discharged from that diversion program. Additionally, previous efforts have also been made by the family to address the appellant's behavioral issues. He attended Don Cheryl and Nuremberger Educational Center, which are outside of the Lincoln Public Schools. So these schools tried to address the appellant's behaviors at a very young age. Additionally, the school supervision mentioned at Yankee Hill, that is a school outside of the Lincoln Public Schools. It's a smaller setting, and Ms. Bowers did go and get him enrolled in that school. However, this part of the safety plan was not feasible to meet up to Dr. Lemke's expectations. The initial offense occurred on a school day in or on school grounds, close to school grounds, shortly after school hours. The appellant was in school that day, so the presumption is that he had the loaded weapon with him on school grounds. The probation officer, Ms. Russler, I believe, did indicate in her testimony that it's unlikely that Yankee Hill would be able to provide the one-on-one supervision that was required by Dr. Zlomke's safety plan. So this, again, this part of the probation plan and Ms. Bauer's proposal did not meet the feasibility of Dr. Zlomke's recommendation, further going towards the exhaustion efforts. Ms. Bowers did indicate other individuals that could help her with supervision of the appellant. However, none of them were found to be suitable by probation. One was the assaultive live-in boyfriend. One had an open case in which her own children were not residing in her home. Another lived out of state, and another was disabled. So essentially, all of the individuals Ms. Bowers could come up with were not appropriate to meet Dr. Zlomke's recommendation either. Additionally, Ms. Bowers indicated if the appellant was not in school, she could take him to her place of work and he could play video games in the back room. Well, this clearly doesn't meet the plan. He would be on his own, no supervision. So as the court can see, the juvenile court went through extensive testimony and evidence. Clearly, the first part of that test, the exhaustion effort, has been met. There were previous services that tried to rehabilitate the juvenile before even coming to juvenile court. The second prong, the appellant argues that the court gave excessive weight to the second prong. Well, the fact is, the severity of appellant's offense did require that extra caution in determining whether an out-of-home placement was appropriate.
Before you run out of time, I'd like to ask you to respond to the appellant's argument that even if we would find this matter moot, we should still handle it under the doctrine of capable of repetition yet evading review.
Again, Your Honor, I would point out that if the court were to find that it was moot, the state would still have to prove going through all those exhaustion efforts at the YRTC commitment hearing. So we would, it wouldn't render the time at OHB like it didn't happen. It would still, it's not like this record is wiped clean and we can't talk about his successes or failures at that level. But we would have to show again that all levels of reasonable probability services would have been exhausted.
And that would be a fact-specific requirement in every case, right?
Yes, and again, the facts of this case are very serious. I think that's something the court needs to take into consideration. This isn't a child that was adjudicated on shoplifting a candy bar and was held to be out of home. This was a child that held a loaded gun to a victim's head. Maintaining that juvenile in the home clearly was not in his best interest or in the community's best interest, as there was a significant risk of harm to both. Maintaining him in the home, there was no home life that was conducive to that treatment. The court notes that the escalating and varied criminal history over the past year, there's suspicion of gang involvement, there's photos on social media with the appellant throwing gang signs with gang rhetoric, and probation did have the opinion that there would be a significantly less risk to the community if the appellant were in a group home setting as opposed. So with that, we would ask that the court respectfully affirm the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time does the appellant have for rebuttal?
1 minute.
May I approach?
Thank you, Your Honor. For rebuttal, I would like to focus on some of the arguments that the appellee made regarding two recent cases by the Nebraska Supreme Court, specifically In Re Interest of Kiana R. and In Re Interest of Nicholas K. I agree with the rule that the appellee stated, which is that services that don't have a reasonable possibility for success are not services that need to be ordered, even if they have been tried before. In the In Re Interest of Kiana R., you had an evaluation that specifically recommended that the juvenile step down to a group home level of care, and that was where she had the opportunity to be most successful. This is not the case in Roberts, the fact pattern in Roberts' case. He was evaluated twice. Every single bit of information that probation had was ordered and provided to be ordered, I'm sorry, was ordered to be provided and provided to the evaluator. And based on all that information, he knew about the offense. May I finish?
Yes.
He knew about the offense, he knew about the family issues, and his evaluation still recommended that level of care. Therefore, it was a reasonable, it had a reasonable possibility of success. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The matter is submitted and you are excused. That concludes our arguments for the day.